From the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we're pumping wattage high and low, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world. So keep it tuned right here. Well, Monday is the big day, the official release of the anthology. It was a dark and creepy night. Real life encounters with the strange, mysterious, and downright terrifying. And if you look at the front cover of this book, you will see my name, and you will also see Andrea Sarkopol, as well as on the spine. And I want to tell you a little bit about the process it took to put this book together, because this is a very different kind of book, and you have to appreciate that when you pick it up and you start reading it. You know, usually when an author decides to write a book, well, he or she will crank out some manuscript for months or years and then send it off to an agent or a publisher and hope that they want to publish it. And then once a deal is struck, well, then you get an editor, and the editor and the author, they work together. The editor can rewrite things, edit things, polish it up. And then finally, it gets printed and distributed, and everybody holds their breath and hopes it does well. Well, this book was very different. And let me explain to you all the work it took to put this book together. You know, I published my first book when I was about 15, and when I was around 17 years old, I was fascinated with all the legends and lore growing up in the mountains of Western North Carolina, but I wanted to put together an anthology of true stories told first person in the words of people who had these experiences. And so I talked about it on the radio, and I put up posters around town, and people started sending me stories, and I actually cobbled those all together into an anthology called Speaking of Strange. And believe it or not, you can see this name, Speaking of Strange, it lasted, and it became the name of this radio program. And I hope that someday I'd be able to do a similar project, but on a global scale. And this book is the realization of that. I wanted to do a book just called Creepy Little Tales. And so basically I set up a website, creepylittletales.com, and we set up a processing forum where people could send in their own true experiences. And I said, look, I know that most people out there are not professional writers. It's okay if you can't string a couple sentences together or you have, you know, bad grammar. We will do our best to get qualified people to polish this up and make it presentable. Don't be intimidated. Just send us your experience, whether it deals with ghosts or UFOs or interdimensional beings or psychic phenomena or angels or demons or synchronicity or even things which are too bizarre to even classify. Well, after I started promoting this highly on various radio programs and the internet, stories came flooding in. And it's amazing. I had no idea what to expect, of course. So when these stories came through the website, the very first person they went to was my wife, Lauren. And she filtered through spam and other things that, you know, would obviously come into a free form like that on the net. She took all the databases and she sort of coordinated it into documents that I could read, and she passed all these stories to me. So I read over all these stories, selected the ones that I thought had the greatest potential to really capture the spirit of the book, and then I sent them to Canada to my friend Andrea Sarkopol, who is an editor, and we're going to get back to Andrea here in a moment. Andrea, bless her heart, was able to go through some of these tales that were, you know, difficult to understand, shape them and polish them into a presentable story, send those back to me, and we're talking about, you know, the vast majority of these stories that came in, they needed some work. I then took those stories. I put them into a proper submission manuscript, sent it to an agent. Agent goes to the publisher. Publisher says, we like this, but let's change the name. Let's call it It Was a Dark and Creepy Night. Let's change this. Let's change that. Okay, fine. We need more stories. So we got more stories coming in. Finally, all those stories were put into the proper format, sent back to the publisher, where there was an initial editor who went through and made whatever, you know, adjustments and changes, then to a second editor who made changes to it, and then there was a proofreader, and there was all this paperwork that had to be done. Eventually, I had to find an illustrator, and I picked Steve Owens in Asheville, a fantastic illustrator who did the artwork inside. And after this sort of long, elaborate process, finally, this thing was put into print. And it's already available at Amazon.com. Hopefully it will be in many of the bookstores on Monday. But let me tell you something. When it comes to reading these stories in a nice, clear manner, I knew that Andrea Sarcopel would be the right person to work on this, because she travels the world all the time investigating strange phenomena. She goes to a lot of these conferences. Everybody knows her at the conferences. She's been to France, here in the Bermuda Triangle, Belize. She's investigated all kinds of locations in the U.S., like Alcatraz, the St. Augustine Lighthouse, the Queen Mary, the battlefields of Gettysburg and Eastern State, and Mansfield Penitentiaries. And, of course, she was with us on our expedition to Transylvania and Romania. And Andrea works with editing documents and doing communication all the time for the government in Canada. And so when she sat down and started looking at some of these stories and trying to put herself in the position of the person who had the experience and sent the story in, I felt that this might actually just sort of creep her out and give her some bad nightmares. So, Andrea, welcome to Speaking of Strange. And let me just ask you, was it a little bit creepy for you to read these stories? Did you get nightmares? What was the process like for you?
Well, Joshua, there were no nightmares. It was definitely kind of a unwinding from all the government stuff I had been doing through the day, and definitely kind of relaxing in the evening to go through these awesome stories that people had submitted.
And so now, when you're going through and you're, you know, thinking about the scenarios that are transpiring for people, what were some that kind of stood out in your mind? And I know that there are, I think, approximately at least 150 of these stories that made the final cut that are in the book, something like that. And people are going to be asking me and asking you forever, like, what's your favorite story? And that's very, very difficult to pinpoint. I do have some that I want to share. But what would you say, if you had to pick one, might be your favorite story, Andrea?
I think the first story in the book, the one that is in regards to a lady who remembered Abraham Lincoln's funeral for something.
Yeah.
I think that was probably the most touching and shocking to me as I was editing. It left me with a smile on my face.
Yeah, would you care to retell that story in your own words?
Well, it's been a while since I've read it, so.
And you've read a lot of stories.
I have.
I know.
All
it's
of
hard.
Them, I think. I think there's only maybe one I haven't read in there.
Uh-huh.
And I think, isn't that Shelley's story? Is Shelley on here?
Yeah, absolutely, yes. As a matter of fact, Shelley read her story on the air last hour. Yes, absolutely. She's the first person to actually read a story in her own words. And so now, okay, here, let me just go ahead and tell you one of my favorite stories. And I think this one kind of embodies the elements here, because what we were looking for were stories that would be short, like a page or less. They have to be true. We want them told in the words of the person who had the experience. And also, they hopefully will kind of send a little chill down your spine. And there's a story from Minnesota in 1997 called The Butcher Knife in the Bathroom. And it's about this couple that moves into this house there in Minnesota. And shortly thereafter, they wake up one morning and find that there's a butcher knife in the bathtub. Now, that, of course, would be very bizarre for anybody. But over the next 3 years, this continued to happen. Until finally they decided to throw a party and invite some of the neighbors over, and that's when they found out that one of the previous owners of that property in the 1960s killed herself in that house in the bathtub with a butcher knife. Da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na, there it is, right? That's the kind of thing that, you know, you could tell that around a campfire, and people would say, oh, man, that's spooky stuff. And yet that's just sort of the tip of the iceberg. Were there any stories, and we're coming up on our first break here soon, Andrea, but were there any stories that you just felt like, wow, I can't even figure out how to classify this, or any that really stood out as something that really kind of blew your mind?
One that really had me stumped was titled, I believe, Geometrics.
Mm-hmm.
And it just involved a gentleman sitting at a bar and looking over towards the washroom and seeing this odd geometric shape kind of form just in front of his eyes. And he thought he was kind of losing his marbles, and he looked at the people around him, and it appeared they were seeing the exact same thing. In the end, it turned out that it wasn't the first time that had happened. I've never heard of anything quite like that before, and it was definitely, definitely strange.
That's a really good example, because whenever people look around themselves and they see something that looks interdimensional, almost like that they've stepped from this world into some kind of Tron-like computerized environment, it makes you wonder about the nature of this reality that some people even call a holographic reality. Okay, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to share more of these creepy stories with you. I could just give them away, but I'd rather just have you trust me and tune back in. And let me tell you, these are stories that they'll send that little shiver down your spine. This is the program where the unusual becomes usual, presented to you by Wright's Coin Shop. And you can call them at 828-298-5402. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.
The calls derail, a smile from a veil. Do you think you can tell? That is just as real, but not as brightly lit. A dark side.
Oh my goodness. How scary. How thrilling. The dark side. I love it when the guy goes, but, there is a dark side. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, the show where the unusual becomes usual, presented by Wright's Coin Shop. I am Joshua P. Warren, talking right now with Andrea Sarkopol about It Was a Dark and Creepy Night, real-life encounters with the strange, mysterious, and downright terrifying. And, of course, This book is going to be officially released on Monday, but you can go to Amazon and you can buy it right now. Last I looked, there was already at least one good review. So Andrea, now you have a story in here. Would you like to tell us a bit about your story?
Well, I haven't actually read how it's come out after the editors have had at it, but it essentially is geared to my first major paranormal encounter in Goulet River, Ontario, which is north of Sault Ste. Marie. And it was just an odd, odd home that we rented for almost free. The average house would rent for about $1,000, but we had this place for $300 a month. And there was no wildlife, even though we lived in the country. Friends would come and visit. They would leave after two nights of staying because lights would turn on while they're unplugged. They would have strange noises, something whispering in their ear. Their baby would cry all night in the next room to us, but we would not hear it. My pillow went missing. Glenn would go away, my husband, and there would be footsteps in the basement and doors opening and closing, coming upstairs towards me. And it was alarming. I mean, at that time, I wasn't into the whole paranormal investigation thing, but this certainly launched me into that path.
And so, Andrea, would you say then that you became a believer of some kind after this happened to you?
It actually took a friend who had left the home after two nights of staying, after driving 10 hours to visit us, to tell me after we moved out that she thought the place was haunted, because I had just pushed it back in my mind, all these really weird, odd things about lights turning on all the time and animals barking at things that just weren't there. I just kind of pushed it back in my mind and told myself, you know, there's a logical explanation for it. Same thing that my husband did. And finally, once somebody else said the words, your house was haunted, it kind of all came together and really launched my curiosity into being able to investigate the unknown.
All right. Here's one of my favorite stories from the book. It's from Garden City, Michigan, 1972. Tracy says, one night, many years ago, I went to sleep, and a few hours later, I was awakened by the sound of gnashing of teeth and growling of what I thought was a very angry dog. I could feel its claws scratching into my chest. I immediately started flailing at it to get it off me, and then jumped out of bed and ran to my parents' room. I knocked on their door. My mother opened it, and I told her what just happened. We went into my room. She looked around, including under my bed, and proceeded to tell me it was just a bad dream. I pulled up my pajama top and showed my mom my chest, and I asked her, "Do bad dreams do this?" My chest was covered with red claw marks. Anything that can come into your bedroom at night when you're asleep and you're lying there vulnerable, that's the kind of stuff that kind of creeps me out. And especially if you consider that, you know, when the very first psychical investigations, as they used to call them, began in the Victorian era in England, often they would take a person along on the team called a sleeper. And that person's job was simply enough to lay down and go to sleep at the location. They believed that the sort of dormant energy of the sleeping person was something that a spirit could feed upon, and it would help things manifest. And you know, the funny thing is, we're talking about a technique that was used hundreds of years ago, and yet the more we do our investigations with our modern technology, the more we tend to think that, sure enough, there may be some validity to this, that when you're sleeping, well, there may be things out there, dark beings that come and feed on your sleep. So Andrea, you sleep well, huh? You don't have any kind of like spooky moments where you wake up and you think there might be something dark in the bedroom?
Sure, I have the odd one.
Mm-hmm.
I take special sleep aids.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I mean, very, very, very rarely do I ever have any nightmares or have anything odd happen. It's just usually a busy mind.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes, I got to tell everybody, sometimes it happens to me. I will wake up in the middle of the night, and I'll look over, and it will just look like there's a big black form there, and my heart's racing, and, it scares me. Now, I don't know if it's because I'm just sort of in that, you know, semi-awake, you know, dream state or whatever, and I'm seeing something here that is the product of my own mind, or if it's me catching a glimpse of something that's showing up and feeding off me. Plenty of people would say, I've done my best to attract them to me, so if that's happening to you, well, you're getting what you deserve. Here's one of those stories that I find especially weird. This is from Dallas, Texas. It's very, very short. Listen to this. Ernest E. Jonas Jr. sent this to us. He said, my grandmother lived in San Antonio, Texas. She was in bed asleep around 10 p.m. when she abruptly awoke, sat up in bed, and blurted out loud my nickname, Bubba. 400 miles away in Dallas, Texas, I was wide awake in my bedroom when I clearly heard her voice call out my nickname. My door was open, and a sound came from the hallway. See, I would put that maybe into one of those classes where you're not exactly sure how to categorize it. Could it be psychic? Well, sure. You know, it could be some kind of telepathic thing. How do you feel about that tell, Andrea? How does that strike you?
I think it's completely plausible. I mean, I'm definitely a skeptical believer, but I strongly think I was visited by a friend who had passed away the night after it had happened. And, I mean, yeah, it's like you're upset when that happens, but when something so extraordinary occurs and you normally don't recall your dreams, and you certainly do recall the certain one, I don't know if you know Father Andy Calder?
No. Mm-mm.
From IM6 on Paranormal State, the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
He passed away a few years ago, and I really strongly believe he visited me the day after.
So what happened?
It was just really odd. It was this light shining, and I was very fortunate to have one ray of it shine on me, and he appeared. And him and his fiance, Evie, Hallie, she was there, and he was just joking around like always and talking to her, talking about her, and I mean, it was very touching. I don't think this stuff's far-fetched. I think it's very plausible.
Yeah. Well, you know, our show is broadcasting from our flagship station, News Radio 570 WWNC in North Carolina. And so before we go to break, here's an interesting story from Tennessee next door, 2002-2003 by Mary Jane Collins. After waking one night and being awake for a few moments, stretching, yawning, and preparing to go back to sleep, I noticed a slowly swirling mass of energy in the room with me. I rubbed my eyes and looked again, and it started to come together in the form of a vertically oriented, swirling galaxy shape with what resembled a black hole at the center. I rubbed my eyes again, and it was still there. It looked as if it had iridescent, clear colors overlaid on the room's background. You could see right through it like a heat mirage on a hot road in the summertime. I got up and walked over to get a clearer look. I wanted to touch it or stick my head inside and have a look, but then a quick fear overcame me. She goes on to say, I decided to stand and just look at it for a while until it dispersed. And she wonders, what if I had touched it or stuck my head in the center to have a look? Maybe when you hear stories about people who disappear, they do that. We're going to take a break. More creepy tales on Speaking of Strange right after this. Encounters with the strange, mysterious, and downright terrifying. Oh, the list of weird stories goes on and on. The book is officially released on Monday. You can go right now to Amazon and you can order it there. Welcome back to Speaking of Strange, presented to you tonight by Wright's Coin Shop. I am Joshua P. Warren. On the line we have, from Canada, Andrea Sarkopol. And we are talking about some of these stories that just sort of stand out. And it's hard. It's hard to go through these because there are so many of them. But, you know, here's a story that that I thought was impressive because it came from a police officer. Joan Rudzinski. From Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, 2006. I'm going to read her story. I'm a single mom, and one night I worked until 11:30 p.m. By the time I got home, let the puppy out, and made my way upstairs, it was just about midnight. I passed by my son's bedroom and stopped to peek in and blow him a kiss while he's sleeping. I've done the same thing every night for 17 years. Well, I had two home phones in my house, one in my bedroom and one in the kitchen, though we also both have cell phones. Well, this particular night, as I passed my son's room, I heard his cell phone ring. I listened for a minute. He didn't answer, and it stopped. I didn't think anything more of it, and I went to bed. The next morning, I was having coffee when my son came downstairs getting ready to leave for school and asked, "Mom, did you call me last night?" I said no, but explained that I had heard his phone ring. He showed me his phone, which said our home phone had called him at midnight. See, that's from a police officer now. it's kind of the whole, you know, when a stranger calls concept. This call apparently came from inside the house. Andrea, do you have any kind of fear that when you travel around the world to all these places, and I mentioned at the top of the program or the top of the hour, you've been to Romania, France. You went to Belize for the end of the Mayan calendar. You've been to Alcatraz, the Queen Mary, Gettysburg, etc. Do you ever think that when you become involved with this kind of research, when you read these kinds of stories, when you start thinking about this kind of material, there's a possibility that you may be attracting unpleasant things to yourself?
Well, actually, Joshua, there was one instance where I think I did bring something home from Gettysburg one year after a friend visited with me who was going through some personal hardship, and the trip did not end well. And ever since we had returned home from that trip, there had been, for a period of, I don't know, 4 months or so, a very heavy weight in the home. And that's actually what made me get into personal contact with Father Andy Calder that I mentioned in the last segment, where I was looking for some kind of guidance as to how to clear this out of the house. There were all kinds of crazy things that happened, like I thought I had had a heart attack. I was talking to our friend Dave Schrader and a psychic friend of his. There was Glenn having a simultaneous asthmatic attack, and when he went to go do his puffer, a bug flew in the back of his throat, and he almost inhaled it and had to go to the hospital because of an insect. It was just one thing after the next in the home, and that was most unpleasant. And after talking to Andy Calder, and I mean, I'm not an overly religious person, but he provided me with details as to how to clear the home in accordance with his beliefs. And once I obtained everything required to clear the home, the house was just fine afterwards. The actual scariest part of that whole incident involved getting in touch with Andy. And when I picked up the phone to call him one evening, I dialed his number, and it dialed 911 instead.
Oh.
And I heard, "You've reached 911. What's your emergency?" And I hung up the phone. I called his number a second time, and he actually lived in Tennessee with Evie. And when I called the second time, the phone call was interrupted, and again, "This is 911. What's your emergency?" And I just explained that I was calling a friend in Tennessee that had no 911 in their phone number. So we ended the call, and I called the third time and left him a voicemail. He never received. So we eventually were in touch, but it was definitely a challenge.
Holy cow, Andrea. You know, that is really messed up. You would try to call him under those circumstances and get 911 twice. Yeah, that's
calling your exorcist friend. It's not something I'm going to tell the 911 operator.
That is a creepy little tale right there. That's a good one. Oh. Well, you know, since we're going to go through the list of some of the, you know, really weird things, here's one that just stands out in my mind, and I'll just paraphrase this one. Colorado, 2011, a woman goes to Walmart, buys a brand new digital camera. She gets home, unwraps it, puts the batteries in it, turns it on, and there is a photograph of her on the phone from that day with the same clothes that she was wearing that day. How whacked is that? I mean, this is the kind of stuff, again, I mean, where do we fit these things into the categories that, you know, everybody wants to say, well, it's a ghost, it's a UFO, alternative timelines. I mean, I don't know. And mind you now, we don't have any way of scientifically proving whether or not these stories are true. But what I can tell you is that every single person who sent us a story gave us their what they claimed to be their legal name, their legal address, and we have a person who's willing to say, hey, here's who I am, here's what happened. And here's another one that kind of makes you scratch your head. And I love this one for a number of reasons, because it kind of taps into that interdimensional stuff. This guy named Gary Chun, who works in pest control from Pontotoc, Mississippi, he had an experience in 1987. He said he and a couple of friends were returning home one night. We were all 17 years old, had just dropped off some sisters at home. Apparently, maybe they'd been on a date. Yeah, I think he said it was a double date or something. And he says, we dropped the ladies off by the 11 p.m. curfew, then headed back to my house. We took a back road that we traveled all the time that was just a couple miles from where I lived. One of the guys asked me to stop on the road so he could relieve himself, and the other agreed that he needed to do the same. The road was gravel-topped and was lined with trees and fences on both sides. He says, when I stopped the car, it appeared as if the car was suspended off the road just a tad. It seemed as if the road kept passing underneath us, and I could see the trees, grass, and fence posts passing by equivalently on each side of the car. It appeared as if I was still driving on the road about 30 miles per hour. I knew the car was stopped because I had the brake all the way down to the floor and was no longer guiding the wheel. When my friends asked me why I wasn't stopping, I knew they were seeing the same thing. I told them I had stopped the car. And to prove it, I turned on the car's interior light and showed them that I was standing on the brake and not holding the steering wheel. His friends were so frightened, he says, I lifted my foot from the brake and this time floored the gas. About a quarter mile down the road, we bravely stopped to see if the same thing would happen again, and it did not. So I turned the car around and went back to the original spot, and the same thing happened exactly as it had before. Frightened again, I took off very fast and went home. The experience was much like being dizzy, but instead of things twisting around us, they rushed past and underneath us. Inside the car, everything seemed very normal, just as everything had been a normal weekend night for us up to that point. What in the world was that guy experiencing? We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to wrap up this hour and this conversation here with Miss Andrea Sarkopol. But I have a story I want to share with you that maybe I can only share this time of night when we call it Safe Harbor. It has to do with an adult toy. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Spring.
Thank you.
And we are in the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. I am Joshua P. Warren. Coming up next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour. And that's when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial stuff. Not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended. So you can determine whether or not that's your cup of tea. And, well, we may be getting it kicked off a little bit early with this next story that I want to read to you guys called A Little Afternoon Delight. But let me ask you, Andrea Sarkopol, when, you know, after having worked on this project and thinking about all of these bizarre, this whole weird spectrum of experiences, I mean, what is the ultimate conclusion that you've drawn about reality?
I think after going through every single word of every single story with like one or maybe two exceptions in that entire book and essentially, you know, writing or rewriting or editing or whatever you want to call it, that co-authoring with you, there's definitely a lot of things out there that happen that nobody hears about, and these books are the only way I think anybody is going to get to hear all these unique experiences people have. And I mean, a lot of times people experience things, like I was saying earlier in the segment, thinking, you know, you slough it off, you think nothing of it, you make a rational explanation in the deep dark depths of your mind, when really the reality is there's no rational explanation. It's definitely something that's unknown and paranormal. And it's great when you have these stories that let you know there's other people out there experiencing the same thing or similar.
Yeah, that's true. I'm curious how many people will read these stories and say, oh, man, I can't believe that somebody else has had this experience. This matches what happened to me. Well, here you go. Here's a story that, again, it's a little bit touchy. It's good for this time of night. It's from Middletown, Connecticut. It happened in 2012. It was sent to us by Jennifer Ann Clavitt. I'm not going to read the whole thing verbatim, but basically says that she and her husband were having some problems with their nocturnal fun. And so her friend suggested that she order a battery-operated device. And she said, when it arrived a few days later, I was so silly. I was looking at my husband, and he and I had a good laugh about it. We decided it was pretty bizarre, and we stuck it in a box in my bedroom closet on the shelf. The box was securely on the shelf. She said the next night around 3 a.m., my husband was awoken from a sound sleep because he felt something pinch him hard on the butt. Now, thinking I'd done it, he turned and saw that I was facing away from him fast asleep. So perplexed, he finally decided it must have been a dream. He got up to use the bathroom, and while he was standing in front of the sink, he felt all the hair on his neck rise. He got this very creepy feeling, and then he went back to bed. The next day, Saturday, she said, well, we engaged in a little afternoon delight, and cuddling together afterwards, he shouted, ouch, and demanded to know why I pulled his arm hair so hard, and I explained that I couldn't have possibly done it as his arms were outside the covers and mine were beneath them. He became very unnerved, and we didn't know what to think. The next evening, we're downstairs watching TV when a loud bang came from the bedroom. Concerned, he went to investigate the noise, and after a moment, he called me upstairs. When I got to the doorway, he was standing with his hand on his hips, looking at me. In front of him, halfway across the bedroom from the now open closet, was the box with the toy in it, and that did it. We knew that something had attached itself to that thing, and we wanted it out of the house ASAP. I took it to a dumpster and threw it away and proceeded to smudge the house with sage. We smudged every nook and cranny, sprinkled salt all over the windows and doorways. She says, we've never had
another incident like this, and I'm very grateful that I'd never used this strange thing. My husband and I think the attachment was a succubus because it made my poor husband the target of its affections. We think it garnered its energy from our encounter. And she says, I would advise everyone to think twice before buying these kinds of toys, and at the very least, cleanse them well before you bring them into your home. Well, as you can see, folks, these stories, they run the gamut. We have a story about cryptids. We have a story about a guy who says he has aliens in the crosshairs of his gun. All he has to do is squeeze the trigger. Did he do it? You have to find out when you read It Was a Dark and Creepy Night. Real life encounters with the strange, mysterious, and downright terrifying. You can buy it on Amazon.com. You can walk into your local bookstore, and if they don't have it, tell them to order it. Andrea Sarcopel, thank you so much for all your hard work and for joining us tonight from Canada. It's time for a break. When we come back, it'll be the Dark 30 Hour. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.